Hey everybody, it's Paul Scheer from How Did This Get Made? I wanted to let you know that we have a brand new website. It's hdtgminfo.com. You can find out everything that you need to know about How Did This Get Made on that site, where we're doing live shows, where to buy tickets, what the movies are. Everything and anything is there. And I want to let you know that we have shows coming up in New York and Denver and in some other places that we can't quite announce yet. So bookmark hdtgminfo.com.
The following episode of How Did This Get Made is sponsored by LegalZoom. They're helping keep the show free. If you go to LegalZoom.com and enter the code EARWOLF, you'll get a discount and 100% of what you spend there comes directly back to the show. LegalZoom is the best place to help with your legal needs. They're not a law firm, but they provide self-help services at your direction. For more information on how to support this show and the rest of the EARWOLF podcast network, go to EARWOLF.com/insider.
Now it's time for How Did This Get Made? We're gonna have a good time, celebrate some failure, not just be a hater. Could you know you wonder how did this get made? Let's wallow in the mediocrity of subpar art. Perhaps we'll find the answer to the question, how did this get made?
Hello, people of Earth. Welcome to the third episode of How Did This Get Made? This is the podcast where we make sense of the movies that make no sense. I am Paul Scheer. You might know me from The League. I play the character Andre. And I'm also joined by Jason Mantzoukas, who you might also recognize from The League. What's going on, Jason?
How are you?
I'm good. And, of course, June Diane Raphael, who you've seen on shows like Party Down and Flight of the Conchords. June?
Paul.
By now, you know, we love crappy movies, especially the ones with big budgets, big stars, and big gaping plot holes. Okay, these are the movies that are supposed to be meant for everyone, but are for no one. And look, we're not trying to be haters. We're just saying we don't understand what we are watching. These movies make no sense. We are genuinely confused, and we're trying to find out answers. Now, today's movie is one of my favorites. It's the movie that brought the three of us together and actually started the idea for the podcast. I'm talking about the Robin Williams, John Travolta classic, Old Dogs, currently at 5% on Rotten Tomatoes. This movie comes
Which in and of itself, it boggles the mind.
Oh, it's crazy. Yeah, that even got that high?
Yes. 5% is way
Quite
too
a
high.
Bit.
It's giving
Quite
it a
bit.
Lot. The movie comes in after under 90 minutes, which I'm not even sure that qualifies as a real movie. And I don't know how to describe this movie. It's kind of like a ballet of nut shots in a world of funny faces surrounded by a chorus of farts. it's awesome. It's on Netflix Instant. So if you haven't watched it yet, just stop the podcast right now. Go and watch it. It's only 87 minutes.
A lot of people are like, I don't even need to see this movie. It's so, just listen to the podcast.
You're wrong. It's really funny and enjoyable.
This is one instance where you must go and watch
the insanity
that
is
this movie.
Yeah, it's like burlesque, listen to the podcast. This one, watch it.
Immediately.
Now, I will try my best to sum up what the premise is.
Don't bother.
Yeah, it's hard. Basically, Robin Williams and John Travolta are successful single sports marketers who have
We'll get to what that is later.
Yeah. I already disagree with you. They don't seem that successful.
They are not.
They
are not that
single.
It is true. All right. Well,
sports marketing is a sham.
The movie has, for me to even write down this description of it, I was having a hard time. Basically, they're sports marketers who have a very big deal coming up with the Japanese. And as they're preparing to close that deal, a woman that Robin Williams had a one-night stand with 7 years ago comes back into his life and says she had his baby. But guess what? Not only one, she had two. They were twins. And now she's going to jail for 3 weeks because she's some sort of echo warrior, and he needs to take care of her kids until she's released.
Who are his kids? Who are his kids?
Who he's never
met. Like just gonna be like, I guess you can take care of these kids.
What the fuck is going on? This is not even the crazy stuff. We haven't even talked about the jetpacks and the puppet suits. All right, so just to give you a taste of the movie, here's a scene where Robin Williams is accompanying this 7-year-old into the bathroom. So as you listen, just picture the image of Robin Williams talking to a 7-year-old boy pooping on a toilet. Here you go.
You're pretty old. How come you don't have any other kids?
Well, initially it was kind of a...
You do know where kids come from, right?
Yeah, sure.
Can you tell me?
Well, in nature, the male and the female of the species, in what some have called the dance of springtime, you know, It's complicated.
Wait for it. Yeah, there you go.
Do I just stand here, or is it?
My mom usually waits outside.
I'll bet she does. I'm out of here.
Okay, now that was the... Oh, yes, those farts are real. They're not made by us. That's the only clip I could find online that did not have overbearing music or just funny faces. Now, here to help us make sense of this movie is our friend. You've seen her on Saturday Night Live, and she is in the upcoming new show on ABC, Happy Endings. Please welcome Casey Wilson.
Hello.
Hello, Casey.
I couldn't be more excited to share this day.
So you are also a fan of this movie. I didn't know,
Oh, big time. And can I just point out in your synopsis, the woman that Robin Williams was with, I just want to point out she was played by Kelly Preston.
Yes, John Travolta's wife.
Thank you.
And John Travolta and Kelly Preston's daughter,
Ella Bloom,
is also in the movie.
And if you have
Robin Williams' child.
If you have a chance, go watch Every Little Step I Take, the remake of the Bobby Brown video that John Travolta and Ella Bloom did. But let's not get ahead of ourselves.
Speaking of that clip, though, Paul, those farts were 80-yard in. Those farts were not, because if you watch that scene, their reactions, they're not reacting to
those farts. It has nothing to do with the farts. That's
farts.
A clear example of somebody being like, this scene's falling a little flat. Farts? Yup.
Yeah. That is the Nacho Libre. The Nacho Libre trick. That was the same thing that happened in there. In Nacho Libre, every time there was a dull moment, they just pumped in a fart noise. Like, oh, they've been tricked. All right,
How is it? On what planet are we okay with, like, a grown Robin Williams watching a kid shit? And having that not be like the most perverted.
The dance of springtime.
By the way, having a sex talk with a child on the trailer.
He's a stranger.
He's a stranger.
But he's his father.
Like, hey, stranger, come watch me shit.
But also not answering the question, why don't you have children?
Okay, also,
he never answered that.
But wait, I want to also say this. One of the reasons why Kelly Preston wants Robin Williams in her life is because she goes, my boy never used the men's bathroom before. That was one of the reasons.
Oh, and then instantly he meets the kid and he's like, hi, I'm home. And Robin Williams is so awkward. And the kid's like, oh, I gotta go to the bathroom.
I'm gonna take a big dump.
And then it's like, oh, finally, oh my God, this moment is coming true. And then it's like cut to weird, pervy Robin Williams
standing
in the stall.
Standing in the stall, watching a kid drop a deuce. And the kid's like, where do babies come from?
There's a picture of it on the website if you have not seen the movie. All right, so let's talk. Favorite scenes, because there are so many, I don't even know.
Every scene is amazing.
Every scene is a magnum opus.
Well, I'd like to start off with one that I love, which is the tanning scene. Robin Williams goes into a tanning salon the scene plays out like a scene from Schindler's List meets like a post-rape shower scene where he's overly tanned. He comes out so dark that people in Grand Central Station think he is an Indian.
Okay, the thing that's crazy that happens is he gets so tan and is standing in Grand Central Station to meet Kelly Preston for the first time after 7 years.
Yes.
And Indian people keep coming up to him and asking him if he goes to Old Navy.
Yes. The one guy goes, he says, do you know that there's a deal on cargo pants? It's specific.
At Old Navy.
Actually can speak that dialect and can translate what that was going on in that scene, I guarantee you they weren't saying there's a sale on cargo
pants. Well, that's the thing. That's another, in post, they were like, hey, this is a joke opportunity. What should this Indian dude be saying to him that's hilarious? What about something about Old Navy? Yeah,
perfect.
Maybe.
Yeah.
Cargo shorts?
Yes.
Done.
We landed on it. No more pitches. We have arrived.
We are geniuses.
We're here.
The whole reason that he goes to the tanning salon, too, is because John Travolta goes, you can't go meet Kelly Preston looking like that. You look like an albino.
And he
He's not a more tan person. Yeah, he looks pretty tan. Well, the other crazy thing is that after he meets Kelly Preston, she says, I have a home remedy for that. Do you want me to use
an
it?
An old family secret. To get rid of tanning.
To get rid of a tan. And at this point, she does not know it's a fake tan, although she must know.
She was fine with it, sort of.
She called him Tan instead of Dan.
That
scene where she and he get back together, and he immediately is like, let's take it slow, let's get back together, and she's like, I'm going to jail. And then she is like, we have 7-year-old children together. And also, one of their turns to talk, it's massive, crazy revelations.
And the kids arrive yelling, Daddy.
Daddy.
Yes. They've never seen this man before.
And one of the kids thinks that he's a superhero. That's another lie that has to be
thinks that Robin Williams is a superhero.
Yes.
Kelly Preston's mothering is...
leaves a lot to be desired.
A little bit.
Sure does.
And her the help she has, one of my favorite characters is Rita Wilson.
Oh, why does Rita have to get dragged into
Rita Wilson? Rita Wilson plays Kelly Preston's friend who inexplicably is cross-eyed.
Cross-eyed.
And a hand model.
And is a hand model.
Because she's beautiful in the hands but not in the face.
Right, which is crazy because she's beautiful.
Beautiful.
And she's a hand model who Robin Williams destroys her hands in a crazy...
Okay, well, this is my favorite scene.
I can't even continue.
Can I just say what happens there?
Yes.
Rita Wilson is taking some packages out of the trunk. Robin Williams, he slams her. No, John Travolta.
No, Robin Williams.
Robin Williams slams Rita Wilson's hands in the trunk and immediately Big Girls Don't Cry kicks in.
I forgot that was the song.
How could you forget the song?
Well, I will also say that music plays so loudly and throughout this movie, it's like bum, 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 and you go, well, I can't hear the dialogue of these people. It's insane, but Big Girls Don't Cry, as a woman has just had her hands smashed to bits, and then they pop the trunk, and the trunk hits her in the face, giving her two black eyes and a bloody nose.
Yeah.
Violent.
Really
violent. Do you guys think, though, that that part was written for an unattractive actress, and they wanted to cast Rita Wilson, and so they thought she was too attractive, and that's why she crossed her eyes?
Who knows? I mean, like, I appreciate your attempt to make logical sense out of this, but
what's maddening about the movie is there's no logic. You can't follow one moment, not one line.
Nothing makes sense in this world.
And what is clear, like in other movies we've talked about, we find things to talk about, or oh, this and that, and this story doesn't add up to that. But this is just if you listen to us, all of us are exasperated by everything.
Yes,
nothing makes sense. Nothing obeys any sense of logic or rhyme or reason.
As if like an alien watched an episode of like Home Improvement and was like, I can make this movie. And it's like, just like things. It's like tanning salon, karaoke, golf. You know, it's a word. Japanese people. It's like, it makes no sense.
The setups make no sense.
Should we talk about the
machine? The pills?
Okay. I mean, the machines, pills, or even the grief seminar.
Oh, whatever. The grief seminar, please.
Bereavement group.
So they're in the, they're having this deal, the sports marketers, which, does anyone know what sports marketing is? We've tried to figure out sports marketing.
What's crazy to me is that we're meant to believe that, like, these two dudes run this sports marketing firm and they're about to make the big deal of their lives. They are old. They're old men.
Yes.
They are old people who are acting like...
Old dogs.
Yeah. They're old dogs. Like you or me were like, oh, man, our company's about to take it to the next level.
Yeah.
That would be a movie that would make sense. But these are people that should be, like, retiring.
Yes.
They should have given up. They should be closing up shop.
Yes. Right around this time.
Yeah, their company should be breaking at this point.
Well, it is confusing because are they representing athletes? Yes or no?
I think they're representing organization, like sports. I don't know.
All I know is that the Japanese are very interested to have sports marketers hired for something that we don't know. And there's a translator there, which makes no sense because.
Played by Lori Loughlin.
Lori Loughlin looking
gorgeous.
Phenomenal.
Hot.
Hot to
better
try.
Than ever. Better
is,
than ever.
She
actually.
Looks better.
She
than
is. She does not age.
Does but, not age at all.
Everybody else in this
the
movie.
The only one who doesn't.
No,
everybody else in this movie is a cautionary
so
tale.
Ella Blue looks 100. The DP should be shot. It is unbelievable.
So the translator, who is there for no apparent reason, because apparently the Japanese people can speak English when they want, and then sometimes they speak Japanese when they want. Yep. There's just no rhyme or reason to it.
And in the first scene with John Travolta, when he's giving his big talk to the Japanese... She writes him a note because his story is just killing.
His story about how Robin Williams got dumped by his wife and then had a one-night stand kills.
He's and really got a crazy tattoo.
He's really setting them up. Fremont, yeah. So then she tells him.
Fremont.
She writes on a piece of paper.
These references don't even make sense.
She writes on a piece of paper, "You're doing great." Hands it to him. He's sitting right next to her. And then says to him, "You're really killing."
In the middle of a meeting.
Of a meeting with the Japanese, the dreaded Japanese, who they have to not only impress in this meeting, but have to impress in a golf game.
Is it worth mentioning that Seth Green works for them, or are we just leaving that off the table?
Seth Green.
Let's just leave it at that.
other war guys. We don't have time. We don't have time.
I mean, the list of people: Seth Green, Dax Shepard, Justin Long,
Louis Guzman,
and Margaret.
And Margaret.
The list of people that are in this movie that if I saw them on the street, I'd be like, dude, you need to tell me everything about what the fuck happened in that movie.
Oh, my God. We got to get
that
Justin.
Was insanity.
We need a panel with them.
I know. I want to see that. They should be brought out to some sort of event and talk about this movie.
And forced to apologize?
All right. Well, so the translator is flirting with John Travolta, and she goes, hey, look, why don't you bring the kids to this thing I'm doing, this party, this weekend? They show up to the party.
What it is.
Yeah, they show up to this party, and it is a bereavement club
where they're also playing golf, though.
Oh, that's separate. But no, the golf is in a different place.
Separate place. Oh my God,
that's where Robin Williams.
I thought that was
Robin Williams in a different location.
Sorry, guys. Okay.
This scene is
genuinely don't understand.
This scene that we're about to discuss, just to very quickly, just prior to this scene.
Oh, good. Yes, you have to.
It makes sense that the kids spill the Robin Williams and John Travolta's medicines and redistribute the medicines, and John Travolta and Robin Williams take them, and they take all the wrong medications.
And these medications have crazy side effects.
Crazy side effects, which they explain, like, oh, are you taking this? Oh, yeah, it causes this, that, and the other. Meanwhile, all of these drugs are meant to be consumed just by the men themselves.
And one of the medicines gives you a joke. Remember in Batman, the first movie with Michael Keaton, when they get, like, a Joker smile? That's what happens in this movie. Like, they get facial paralysis in a constant smile. That's one of the side effects.
And insatiable hunger.
Insatiable hunger and bad depth perception. Sure. Those are the three things.
But just for a visual, the people who have the giant smile, it is done with computer graphics so that in the movie, when you're watching it, Travolta, they've like brought, like when you, on your iPhone with face goo, like move your fingers apart and make someone have a crazy enormous mouth.
It looks like a cartoon.
It looks like a cartoon.
It's disturbing.
Yeah. So disturbing.
Especially at the end, when the entire family mistakenly takes this pill.
How dare they leave us on that shot?
That's how the movie ends. The movie ends with the entire family having facial paralysis, smiling for a photo op.
Spoiler alert.
I guess all the kids thought they were taking seasickness pills, but they all took boner pills.
And the
pills.
Baby. And the baby, too.
And the baby. Yes, the brand new baby.
Too.
Oh, my God.
Okay, sorry. Okay.
Let's go back to the bereavement group.
Bereavement group, which is, from what I can tell, it is like a book club for people who have lost people.
Set at like a Great Gatsby-esque mansion.
Yes.
Like a country club.
And they get together just to talk about their grief of their dying relatives. But then what happened was, like, the day before, someone had died. And in her last dying hours, this is said in the movie, she made an apple pie. So that is cooling over there.
Like, said by Anne Margaret.
Anne Margaret, who turns in an award-winning performance.
So we're to understand that a woman who was bereaving, she was in the group. She actually died.
Okay. Yes.
So now there, it's like the group has turned on
the actor becomes the...
Do we even want to mention why Lori Loughlin is there in the first place? She's there because her grandma died, and I guess she couldn't handle it. Now, Lori Loughlin is probably in her 40s. I mean, she looks great, but she's upset that her grandma passed away. Like, so her grandma would have had to...
She had to seek out help.
You're upset that she's in the group at all?
I agree, actually. I'm upset that she
invited children to this gathering.
Yeah.
She invited them, like, come to this fun beach house party, and it's literally people openly weeping, talking about the recently deceased.
And now John Travolta, of course, is taking this medication and proceeds in front of the grief group to stick his entire face into this cherry pie in one of the more disturbing moments.
Yes.
He's trying to make the pie come.
He's going
like
down on a
down
cherry
on
pie.
Yeah, it is just
it is more sexually aggressive than what happens in the American Pie movie.
Oh, it is. There's so many things. Now, meanwhile, Robin Williams is having a golf game with the Japanese. Now, he has accidentally taken the pill that gives you weird perception. So, which causes what? Nut shots.
Yeah.
A lot of nut
shots.
Just
constantly. Golf clubs to the nuts, golf balls to the nuts.
This is like one of the big scenes.
Golf is a metaphor for life.
And when people get hits in the nuts in this movie, the Japanese guys like it. They're like, oh, he respects the game. And that sounds like I'm doing a bad Japanese accent.
That was dignified.
That
was authentic.
I just want to say this, okay? How long have we been talking?
Almost 20 minutes.
We've been talking almost 20 minutes, and I just want to say, we haven't discussed...
We haven't gotten to anything.
Boy Scout Camp.
The surface.
Boy Scout Camp, Bernie Mac, Human Puppeteer, the video iChat with robots, Amy Sedaris as the Nazi
at
single.
Casa de Amor.
I'm telling you guys, like, there is...
Casa de Amor! This is
three shows worth of movie to talk about, because every scene appears as though it's from a different dimension.
It is crazy. I mean... Grandparents
Club?
grandparents. What about the fucking gorilla? The gorilla!
Oh, I'm sorry.
Locked
yes.
in the zoo.
Jetpacks at the zoo, gorilla rescue.
All right, well, we got to be still.
I mean, this is fucking crazy.
What
child-proofing people.
Oh, man.
Oh, forgot about a child.
What is the next thing? Who wants to take a thing? I can keep on going. I can say... Let's talk about it.
Well, I got to say one thing about just character development and the arc of these characters. God. Because honestly, okay, so Robin Williams is supposed to be the guy who, like, isn't good with kids at all, terrible with kids, and that's his journey. He starts off, he seems to be very friendly toward kids.
Occasionally throughout the movie, go, oh, this is why I don't want kids. But then in another scene, go, well, I read the books on child rearing, and
he was reading books before he got these kids?
Somehow he seemed to believe that he wasn't meant to have kids. Or it was somehow...
He's bad with them.
Before Kelly Preston, you have to understand that Robin Williams' character was married for 14 years.
Yeah.
Oh,
and
yeah.
He got a divorce.
Yep.
And that's why they went to South Beach, wherever they went. Now, why didn't they have kids? I'm genuinely wondering.
Because he didn't want kids.
Why?
Well, because they do things like unplug fax machines, which he's... That literally is... At one point, because Robin Williams makes a statement that every businessman makes, which is like, ugh, how can you run a business if you don't have a fax machine? This movie came out last year. and then he goes, this is why I never wanted to have kids. And then the kid hears that and then, like, locks himself in the room. But I guess that is why? Because they unplug fax machines? You know what? I think there are so many things to talk about. I want to segue into our next segment here, which is, you know, look, as you can tell, this movie is insane, but there comes a time in every bad movie where you just sit back and think... That's right, this is our what-the-fuck moment. I'm talking about the moments, like in Revenge of the Sith, when Darth Vader cries out no for 30 seconds, and you're sitting there thinking, what is going on? This is where the movie takes it up another level. So we'll go around, and everyone, pick a moment we have not talked about so we can at least explore this movie a little bit more deeply.
Oh my God.
I mean,
Casey, you were talking about Bernie Mac, which I mean, we've not yet even touched upon.
Jason, I don't have the heart.
This is Bernie Mac's, I believe, final performance in a movie. Okay,
so
the movie
upsetting.
Was delayed because he died. It was delayed a year because they didn't want
right?
it. Yes, the movie was delayed three times. Once because Bernie
well,
Mac died.
That's why the fax machines make sense now.
Once because Bernie Mac died. Once, sadly, because John Travolta's son died. And then once because Robin Williams had a heart attack. Each time this movie was delayed, I read it was delayed almost 3 years. Because tragedy was preventing it from coming out.
I was going to say, does anybody feel like the powers that be were trying to stop this movie from being released?
I do.
Right. Okay, so Bernie Mac is introduced. I mean, like... I wish I could shorthand so we could just talk in a funny way what's wrong with it, but you have to do so much setup for everything in this movie.
No one will believe it, though.
And it's useless, but the point is, Bernie Mac is supposed to...
The people will not believe it. Honestly, ears and eyes will not know what we're talking about.
Okay, the setup is that Bernie Mac is the most powerful puppeteer in creation.
Jimmy Lunchbox.
Can I say one thing about that? When we see Bernie Mac, the first time we see Bernie Mac perform, there's a lot of production value. It's a big set. He's not puppeting.
He's playing a keytar.
Yes.
He's basically George Clinton leading like the P-Funk All-Stars of puppets in playing the
Who
keytar.
Who are not puppets. None of them are puppets.
They're like men in costume.
No strings attached.
The movie. It is. He's just doing this live show playing like an interminably long, like, terrible funk song. They're watching it, and then they go backstage. Okay, so you think it's going to be this thing where it's like, it's a kid's thing. They're going to earn points because they get to meet Jimmy Lunchbox or whatever. But instead, it's a ploy to get to use Bernie Mac's human puppet suit.
Which he goes, remember that...
I'm already fucking exhausted.
There is a line, I believe it goes like this. Hey, remember that human puppet suit we were talking about? And he's like, wait a second, you told him about that? Like, as if this is like a secret invention. And he goes, look, you need to help my friend. This is John Travolta speaking. You need to help my friend interact with children. And this is, I wrote it down. This is literally the line. Bernie Mac goes, let me get this straight. You want me to make this uptight man safe for children? Okay. That's crazy.
Okay.
And basically all you can tell from this giant puppet suit is there's a vibrator-shaped rod that you're supposed to stick down your pants, and he says it will literally tickle your funny bone. That is the human puppet suit, which leads into a scene where Robin Williams is having tea with his daughter. That is the human puppet suit, is so Robin Williams can have tea.
Because Robin Williams is so convinced that he can't interact with a child that he needs Bernie Mac and John Travolta to puppet him through the activities of playing tea with his daughter.
Until he trips and falls into the dog's water bowl.
And then,
the puppet suit goes haywire.
And then he starts really
a dog that repeatedly is like, Rrr?
Okay, the best, speaking of that dog, yes. I just really love with, like, Seth Green, when the dog, you know, pisses on the floor and then pees in a trash can randomly, and the dog is really
that's
old.
That's upsetting.
And Seth Green says to John Travolta about the dog, how old is that dog? Just a nice kind of twist on the titular phrase. It was a really beautiful moment.
I love it.
Do you think that John Travolta was talking to Bernie Mac about that puppet suit so that he could sports market the puppet suit?
Was
he getting into robotics.
Sports marketing? Is that sports marketing?
I love the way you're coming up with ideas for what things could be.
I really like that. You're attempting to make sense
of... You want to find ground underneath your feet.
I want to talk about Seth Green. Seth Green in this movie plays their young protege who was nicknamed GT in college for go-to. And then proceeds throughout the whole movie to say, no one's ever counted on me, no one's ever relied on me. Anyway, he goes to Japan and falls under he goes to Japan for the biggest meeting of his whole life. Seth Green's like, don't mess this up. This is my dream to go to Japan. I'm going to be the best. I'm going to do this. And he immediately falls under the spell of a karaoke master.
And who we never see.
Who we never see.
This is all done in conversation.
Scenes. And he just...
I would love to see those scenes.
Yes, he just goes away and becomes a karaoke.
I would literally love to make a movie, and I'm not even kidding, that is Seth Green's character's journey.
Experience.
That Lost starts, the translation
it literally
with
starts when he leaves them.
In real time.
It starts when he leaves them, so it's like Rosencrantz and Guildenstern are dead. It fits together.
I would love
starts
that.
Starts when he leaves them, he goes
somebody
to Tokyo.
Make that.
And it's an X-rated insane... Like, he falls into a sex club... Crazy karaoke sex club. He's just a sex slave in Japan.
I think that Seth Green should make a Robot Chicken episode just devoted to his character, his adventures in Japan. So Seth Green messes up their Japanese den. This is one of my favorite scenes, which is... So now Robin Williams and John Travolta have to go to Japan.
To be clear, just so people don't think we are minimizing it as the Japanese.
Oh, yeah.
The movie makes no effort to show you this is what the Japanese represent. It literally is, we've got a meeting with the Japanese.
They say the word, the Japanese.
It is reductive from their point of view. We are not doing that.
So they come back and they screw up their meeting in Japan, and John Travolta comes home to get his dog. Now, he's left it at some sort of a day camp.
I have a great...
Now, the day camp, this is something I'm obsessed with. I don't know why, but the day camp is like, the front of the day camp is like, oh, place where you buy doggy treats and things like that. So he pops open the door to, like, the storefront. And it's like, hey, Bucci! Hey, Bucci, Bucci! Who is my Bucci? And, like...
It's a really good Travolta.
Can I say what the woman says to him?
Yes, please.
I'm sorry. In a Long Island accent with the
flattest
actress...
Wait a second. Will you guys just... Can we back up a second?
Yes.
Will you guys
just do
this scene?
Yes.
Okay.
Okay. I'm just going to say, I'm working behind the desk. I've been watching John Travolta's dog at a pet
and
hotel.
And action.
Hey, Bucci! Bucci, Bucci, Bucci! Where's my Bucci?
We tried to call.
Does he say, like, what happened?
We tried to call.
That's it!
The dog is dead! The dog is dead! Oh, my God.
Oh, guys. Old dogs die.
Old dogs, indeed. All right, well...
Oh my God. That's where the bereavement group comes back, because they all show up.
Mm-hmm. At a dog
at that
bereavement
old dog's
group.
funeral.
But that is, I mean, like, but we still haven't touched the entirety of Boy Scout Camp.
Oh, my God.
Matt Dillon's performance.
Matt Dillon!
Bring him up?
Oh, we didn't talk about Matt Dillon
at all. Justin Long.
All of Amy Sedaris, all of the fucking crazy, bonkers zoo.
The zoo.
The zoo.
Let's talk about the zoo for a second.
The zoo is so long. How is this movie only 87 minutes and have there be so
minutes.
Much craziness?
So much has gone into it. So Robin Williams is trying to win back his kids. Don't worry about why. If you haven't seen the movie, you know it. And he's going to the zoo to save his kids, but the zoo is closed but open. It's closed to new visitors, but open to existing
the visitors.
Visitors
that are there.
But certain parts of the zoo are closed off to people who are even in the zoo.
Yep.
And it's the middle of the day on a Saturday for a birthday party. So what does Robin Williams do? He hijacks a jetpack guy.
Because every zoo has a dude hanging out with a jetpack.
Well, he was hired.
Oh, right.
He was hired.
You're right, you're right.
Easy, Jason.
So sorry, guys. I'm sorry. They did justify that perfectly.
This is after Seth Green gets raped by a gorilla who... They get raped by a gorilla and attacked by penguins. I want to throw something at you guys. We're going to go a little bit long for this one because there's no way. I want to throw this at you and just... As a discussion point, according to IMDb, this film was originally R-rated and was to be released by Touchstone Pictures. However, due to poor test screenings, the film was cut down from 107 minutes to 86 minutes to achieve a PG rating.
I want
to
see that cut.
And it was then distributed to the Walt Disney label in hopes of appealing to a more kid-friendly audience.
How could this ever have been rated R?
I don't understand how that's an R-rated movie,
For crassness, it is an R in a way, if that's on the
scale. It's like a G. I mean,
it's like a subpar G.
There's no cursing. Nobody sleeps with it. And there's no sex.
One kiss.
The most sexual scene is the scene where Robin Williams watches the kid take a dump.
And when, that when is John the Travolta most... eats the pie.
How could that have been?
Travolta fucking performs aggressive cunnilingus on that
Actually, it should have been rated R for that scene.
If anyone saw a test screening of the R-rated version, please email us.
Or can get us a cut of it.
Yeah, oh my God. Work at
how
Disney.
Is that possible?
I don't know if that's possible or not.
No, I can't believe it's possible that it was at one point rated R.
You know,
or 107 minutes.
Yeah.
It's crazy. I mean,
20 more minutes. Just think of the other places they could have gone.
Yeah.
It would have been amazing. Let's see. Like, you know, with every movie, I think we learn a lot about ourselves and our lives. And June compiles these thoughts into something that we call
life lessons. So you already touched on the first major takeaway for the movie, and it's an important one. Life lesson number one, get a fax machine. Because they need to run on time or else businesses cannot run.
Fax machines are important.
Yeah, fax machines are really important. Okay, number two, Japanese people are only pretending they don't understand English.
So when in a deal with a Japanese person,
this is like an elaborate thing they do.
Don't bother hiring a translator because it's wasted. Even if the guy's pretending like he doesn't understand.
Unless you want to have a hot date in a grief counseling session.
They can understand. And number three, and this is the most important one. This really came through. Kids are a lot of work.
A lot of work.
That's it.
That's it. Kids are a lot of work.
Kids are a lot of work.
All right. Well, they are. They are a lot of work. Anyone else learn any life lessons in there? Anyone else?
I'm
exhausted.
I tried to watch it again last night and became enraged.
You know what I think is one other lesson, though? And this is about Rita Wilson's character. I think what might happen when she walks into a room for a casting for her hand auditions is that she's so startling to look at in her face that her hands, in comparison, look really good. I don't know that she has beautiful hands.
She's just making the weirdest the choice to be cross-eyed is
weird.
Absolutely crazy.
Yeah. It's bizarre, but you know what? It works. It actually is one of the most subtle performances in the movie.
It is.
For someone playing cross-eyed.
The most subtle
performance. Amy Sedaris is the most subtle in the movie.
Oh my God. Amy Sedaris. Oh, the adults only
can...
Yeah,
she's
amazing.
Oh, amazing.
Well, we did something. Now it's time to hear from you, the listeners. It's time for some viewer mail.
You've got mail.
All right, so this week we gave you a different assignment. The 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 tagline.
Sorry, it seemed like it was going a little slow. I added a fart.
I think that's where it works. We should be.
They'll be
up
adding
music.
A lot more later.
The tagline for Old Dogs is "Sit, Stay, Play Dad." And last week, I asked you guys to email us at howdidthisgetmade@earwolf.com and tell us what you think a better tagline for the movie would be. We got over like 150 responses. They were all amazing. I'm going to read you a few of the favorite ones. This is from Benny Oler. If Benny Hill mixed cocaine with despair and sold it to Telemundo, you might get something like this movie. Old Dogs. Colin Baer.
I only wish Old Dogs had had Yakety Sax.
How did that even miss? Colin Baer writes, Old Dogs. At least Nick Cage isn't in it. Eric Carfagna writes, Old Dogs. Slightly more fun than watching actual dogs get put down. John Stenning. Two old friends, two new kids, hundreds of stale jokes. Old Dogs.
That's good.
James Gray. Old Dogs. Funny as a fart. Only longer. Seth Holland writes, Old Dogs, your brain will play dead. Robert Townsend. Not the Robert Townsend. Maybe
Robert
it
Townsend.
Is.
Yeah,
wow. Robert Townsend. Wow. Yeah. What
from Hollywood
say?
Shuffle or Chinatown, you pick. Old Dogs, at least it's not a snuff film. This one I like. It's a thinker. Neapolitan, or I'm pronouncing it wrong, writes, in Dog Stars, it's a 7. Which would mean it's a 1.
That's pretty good.
I like that one. And then our fan from Japan, Jason Gans, writes, Old Dogs, God help us all.
Simply put.
Oh, man. So that, I mean, that, is, like we said, it
we
barely
touches
the surface. Matt Dillon's performance, which we'll have a clip of coming up, is amazing. The whole
camp. Why did they go, it seems like they go down south to that. Sleepaway
they
camp.
Drive all the way to camp, set up tents,
yes.
And then
why
go
is
home.
Go home.
They go home. They do not stay the night.
No.
So, but they set up tents.
This movie will be watched for generations and generations. This wraps up episode 3. Thanks to our special guest, Casey Wilson. Her new show, Happy Endings, premieres this April 13th?
Yeah.
April 13th. Go watch it. It's awesome.
Thanks for having me.
And no, thanks for doing it. And then we'll be back soon. In the meantime, you can visit our Facebook page. Just search How Did This Get Made or leave comments for us there or on our Earwolf page at earwolf.com. And as always, thank you for all your emails. I know we haven't been responding to them, but I'm a slow typer, but I'm reading them. And in the meantime, you can follow all of us or some of us on Twitter. I'm Paul Scheer, S-C-H-E-E-R.
Miss June Diane.
Jason, you're not on it.
I'm not on Twitter.
Casey?
I'm registered, but I've not yet to tweet.
All right. Well, there you go. See you guys in episode 3.5, and let's go out with this final clip from Old Dogs.
Ultimate Frisbee, that's our game.
Hey, let's do this for our kids, huh?
Yeah.
Come on, man.
Yeah, for the kids. Yeah, man.
All right, let's do this. Sports marketing!
Yeah, sports marketing!
Yes,
sports marketing! Now they've just rubbed stuff
that's
on their
face. That's Bearscat, gentlemen.
Uh-oh.
Yeah. Yeah, it is.
Dad?
Yeah?
I think scat is poop.
Really, son?
Yeah.
Wipe poop on my face?
Yeah. Scat happens, man.
Boom!
Yay!
Nailed it!
Nailed
that
it.
Happens.
USA!
Oh, boy. USA. Thank you very much. Goodbye.
This has been an Earwolf Media production. Executive producers Jeff Ulrich and Scott Aukerman. For more information, visit earwolf.com.
Earwolf Radio. Boom.com. The wolf dead.
This is Jonathan Van Ness, host of Game of Thrones and currently bringing all the light the world can handle on Netflix's Queer Eye. But do you know I also have a baby podcast and that you can find her right here on Earwolf? On Getting Curious, I sit down for a gorgeous conversation with a brilliant expert to learn all about something that makes me curious, like who is the Beyonce of Renaissance art and how can we be less rude to bees? Bees are so cute. They're just making like plant sexy time needs be met.
Right.
Which is great of them. We've talked about cults, we've talked about addiction, the Romanovs, the Middle East, alternative medicine, and dating. And I've spoken with stars like Lizzo, Margaret Cho, and my own mom. A few weeks ago, I got to interview one of my heroes, Olympic figure skater Mirai Nagasu.
Oh my God. Jonathan's crying right now.
Yes, I love an archive. So when you're all done binging season 2 of Queer Eye, head over to Earwolf to expand your baby brain with me on Getting Curious. I want to feel so scared as to why you're going back to the second or third podcast I ever made in my entire life, you weirdo. Why are you sharing that? But share it! I didn't mean to yell at you. I love you so much. And P.S., I've also recorded episodes with Anthony, Karamo, and Tan. Don't worry, Bobby's going to be on real soon. Subscribe to Getting Curious with me, Jonathan Van Ness, now on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, or wherever you listen.